My favorite influencer on YouTube who is a data viz expert is Andy Kriebel. He's someone I could talk to for hours. Even if data viz is not your thing, you'll enjoy the reasons he's been publishing online for more than 10 years. His daily five habits he shared was an unexpected gold nugget in this conversation as well. Andy is a co-author with Ava Murray, hashtag Makeover Monday, and the data viz in this book is stunning. His YouTube channel has more than 7.5 million views thanks to about 750 videos and a subscriber base of 61,000 and counting. I'm Mark Gandy for CFO Bookshelf. My conversation with Andy Kriebel is coming up next. Are you an Excel hack? Or do you prefer Power BI? Or are you a Tableau person? It doesn't matter. Andy Kriebel's comments in this conversation, they are universal. And if you are a CEO, you'll especially enjoy the conversation about dashboards. I started my conversation with Andy talking about one of my data viz heroes, Stephen Few.
I started using Tableau in 2007, went to the very first conference in 2008. That's where I first heard about Stephen Few because he was the keynote speaker there. And Stephen and I have been friends ever since. When I used to live in London, when he would come there, we would meet for a coffee or for lunch or something. It was just, and then I read his book and I was like, oh my God, how have I not learned this in school? Right. I mean, I was totally blown away. Here I am learning this tool that has completely changed my life, and I can't wait to use it every day. And now I can learn the visual side of it to actually make it look good too. Right. Because when I first started building dashboards, I was like, I mean, they looked fantastic to me. They served the purpose. But now looking back, I'm like, those were pretty terrible. And so given what, you know, reading Stephen's book and starting to build a lot of content, I decided to start writing about it for a couple of reasons. One, for one reason, I wanted to remember what I was doing. So I've always found that if I write something down, if I write it in a blog, it reinforces me learning. I never thought about anybody ever looking at it or reading it, right? I still, to this day, write for myself. People happen to look at the blog and the website, but whether they do or not, I'm still going to keep writing. And that was in 2009 is when I first started blogging. And Andy Cutgrave from Tableau did some research several years ago. And apparently I'm the first ever Tableau blogger, which is pretty cool. And I created the first ever Tableau YouTube channel, excluding Tableau, of course. Actually, I might have even had it before Tableau. So I've been just producing, you know, I'm coming up on 750 tutorials on YouTube for Tableau.
And they never age. They never age.
No, it typically does. I mean, the interface looks different, but the techniques and the concepts are still the same, right? In my teaching, I focus on people really understanding how Tableau works, how to use it properly, what are the fundamentals, how do you master those fundamentals. I don't focus on building fancy things because I want people that read my stuff or watch my stuff to be able to immediately apply it to their day-to-day job. And if I teach them how to build some, you know, fancy chart, then is that really helping them? I don't think it is, right? I don't see that as me helping people as best as I can.
If a young person, a young financial analyst or data analyst came to you and said, Andy, should I learn Tableau or Power BI? Which?
I mean, that's the easiest question in the world. Of course they should learn Tableau. You know, I mean, they both have their pluses and minuses. If you have a lot of experience with Excel, the transition to Power BI is very easy. The transition to Tableau, I think Tableau is an easier tool to learn from not knowing anything. Like Tableau, you can pick up and just use without knowing anything about it, where Power BI, you can't quite do that. But there are, you know, there's pluses and minuses for both tool. If I were brand new now, I would probably learn both, because the problem is if you don't specialize in one, it's going to take you a lot longer to get really good at one.
Right.
But if you learn two, it slows down your learning, but you also double the number of jobs that you can be available for. So it depends if you want to go deep or you want to go broad. So I learned Power BI didn't exist when I started using Tableau. So there really wasn't, and I wouldn't have known any different anyway.
I love your YouTube channel, and I'm not a full-time DataViz person. I mm-hmm. use it in my own practice. I use it with organizations I work with. Hopefully someone will take the ideas and run with it, and someone will go get certified or, you know, take this tool to a whole new level. But what I do with your videos is I will stop and I will do them on my own. I'll go through the actual exercise you've created mm-hmm. and recreate it myself. I feel like I'm being tutored. You're not condescending. You're not looking down at me. You just have a gift of teaching, and I hope you've had a lot of people say that to you over the years.
I have. It's always, you know, like you said, it's always a bit awkward to kind of accept those kind of compliments, but it's very flattering, and it makes me feel really good, because that's exactly how I want people to feel. You know, I get that feedback from the people in my training program. They're like, you know what? I love how you take your time teaching things. I ran a workshop on Monday, and I asked people that were in the workshop for feedback. And about five or six people wrote me back and said that. They're like, I appreciate you taking the time. Some of it I understood, but just hearing it explained a second time, a different way, made it make a bit more sense. There was one question that somebody had about a calculation that we went through on Monday, and it's very difficult to explain, and the concept is kind of hard to understand. And we literally took 10 minutes to make sure people understood it. A lady interrupted with a question, and I just let people interrupt. I don't make them put hands up or anything like that. I just want them to interrupt, and because I can't sit here and watch the hands go up anyway. And she asked me, she said, well, can you go through that again? I don't quite get it. I understand what it's doing. Like, I can see what it's doing, but I don't understand it. So I was like, okay, well, let's go through it again. And I tried to explain the logic, and she's like, yeah, I think I get it. And then I said to her, I said, but you don't get it, do you? You know, because I could tell, I've been teaching long enough that I can tell by somebody's face. That's why it's important that when people are on these things, that their video is on. I could tell by her face that she didn't quite get it. I said, are you sure that you understand this? And she's like, no, I don't. Can you do it again? So I come up with a different way to explain it. And that's like the beauty of being the teacher, is I get to learn all of these different ways to explain something. And some of these ways, I've never explained it that way before. I'm just kind of making it up as I go. And hopefully, you know, I catch maybe, you know, 25% of the people each time, and it takes me four times to explain it. On our Slack channel for my membership program, somebody went through the video. They weren't able to attend live, and they're like, I don't get that calculation. I know you tried to explain it in the video. Somebody else replied that's in the program and explained it. It seemed to make really good sense. But I decided this morning, I'm like, you know what? I've thought of a different way to explain this. So I just opened my laptop, turned on the screen recording, and recorded a new video for this person to try to see if it explains how the calculation works. And I was like, well, if I build it as a table, I think they'll be able to see a lot better what's actually happening, right? Rather than kind of, you know, putting a calculation in the filters or putting it on color or whatever. If you have it, build it as a table, people tend to understand it a lot better. He's on the West Coast, so I doubt he's seen it yet. But I'm anxious to hear his feedback on what he thought of that explanation. Because again, it just gives me another tool in my toolkit.
That's another thing I like about your videos. This is not Julia Child, where there's a completed product. You'll start building something from the ground up, and it's like, yeah, you'll pause, like, oh, whoops, let me do this. I mean, it's like, this is the real deal. I feel like, yeah, I'm right there. And that's outstanding.
Yeah, particularly in my live streams. So, you know, people really like, you know, I think I've got like over 300 live streams out there. And because I'm like, you know, I'm going to do these makeover Mondays anyway. Why don't I just like put them out there? And if people want to learn from them, great. And I get the most interesting feedback I get, and the stuff people find most useful is when I mess up. Because, you know, I'm literally talking as I'm building this, right? I'm talking out loud, explaining everything that I'm doing along the way. And sometimes I go down and I'm like, oh, I've hit a dead end here. Okay, where did I mess up? And I'll explain to them.
Realistic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I explain to them, you know, okay, this is where I went wrong. Let's think about this again. Okay. But they really like seeing how I think through the problem and how I get unstuck.
By the way, I promised myself I would not get into the Tableau weeds, but I will just say this. I'm not a level of detail LOD expressions expert, but guess where I've gotten my best understanding and know-how of level of detail expressions? You. Containers. dashboard containers. It's like, oh, he makes it so, so easy. And then date expressions, date diffs. It's like, okay. So I have a lot of content in my Evernote, thanks to you and your teaching.
Are you the only remaining Evernote user?
Hey, I do use Notion, but I use Evernote for just overflow. I do use Notion. Good one. Hey, I want to go back to something you said a few minutes ago. You were saying, why didn't I not learn this earlier? This is my opinion, especially after reading Stephen Few, the shoulders he's standing on as well. I think in high school, every high school student should learn the effective use of charts and graphs. How come this is not taught universally at a younger age?
They don't know the content. You know, how are they going to teach it if they don't know it? So you're going to have a whole new generation of teachers. And they have enough trouble hiring teachers now. Right. You know, it's finally starting to come into universities. But if you're a tenured professor, do you really care to learn something like that? You know, they don't learn anything new, right? They don't have to. They're tenured. So, you know, you've got dinosaurs that don't want to learn something new. Right. You know, they haven't changed their curriculum in 25 years. Why should they change it now? So you've got, you know, this whole culture of resistance to change, which is very normal, right? People don't like change. But ultimately, there's no skills to teach it.
Andy, I don't know about you, but with me, when I onboard a new client, usually it starts out with a conversation up front, and the owner will say, Mark, I need a dashboard. I'm not going to ask you how many times you think I've heard that, but I'll say it's about 90% of the time. Mark, I need a dashboard. I don't know if they heard that in Vistage. I don't know if they heard it at some event. I don't know if they did some searching. And it's like, they're not asking the right question. If you were to hear from a CEO, Andy, I need a dashboard, what would that mean to you? What would be your first reaction?
My first reaction, I wouldn't react to their question or their statement. I would ask them, what's the problem you're trying to solve? Or what's the question you're trying to answer? Because you might not need a dashboard. You might just need one number, right? I'm not going to build a dashboard just because they say build a dashboard. That if you don't understand why they want it, then you're completely wasting your time. You know, do they have a specific business problem they're trying to solve or a particular metric they're trying to measure? Are they wanting to get a better idea for, you know, how their sales team is performing because they have a hunch that something has changed? You know, there's all kinds of directions that could go, but unless you understand the root cause of what they're trying to answer, you shouldn't even be talking about a dashboard. I would just ignore their request altogether about what they've asked for. But most people just say, oh, this is CEO. I have to build a dashboard but they're going to respect you a lot more if you give them what they need.
By the way, and this kind of leads into the next question, before data viz, we need data. Now, a lot of the businesses I work with, $20 million and under, Andy, this is going to shock the living daylights out of you. A lot of us are storing our data in Google Sheets. I know, yeah, brace yourself. Best advice for people going down this data viz journey, What if someone cannot afford, say, like a Snowflake?
Right.
What's the best way to start, A, finding the data, to extracting, and then finding a place to, that could be a whole hour, but I'm sure that's something that you all address in the past in your data school, right?
It's not just businesses 20 million and under that make decisions by Excel. You know, when I was at Coca-Cola, the entire business was driven by Excel. I had a spreadsheet that I got from somebody else. I made changes to it. That got sent to somebody else. Then it got sent to somebody else. And who the hell knows what number ends up with the CEO? And who knows? And it's, I guarantee you it's not right. Right. You know, so I feel pretty confident in telling you that every earnings report is wrong. It's a best guess. It's, you know, we think the number is something like this because they don't know. Some of that's because businesses are driven by Excel. Some of it is because, you know, they don't know how to get their data in the first place. Yeah. They might just get their sales from, you know, their cash machines, right? I mean, that might be literally how they do it. But back to your question though, you know, it's ultimately, it doesn't matter if you build a dashboard, a chart, whatever, if the data is, you know, it's garbage in, garbage out. So you have to get your data right. Or that's, again, is data ever right? Maybe. But you need to get it to a place where it's good enough to make decisions on. You know, if you have a board that you need to report to or shareholders, that's quite different than, you know, let's say you and I were in business together and we had three other people working for us. If it was good enough, we'd probably be, okay, that's fine. The numbers are going in the right direction or the wrong direction. But as far as, you know, of course, Excel is the easiest place, but that's dangerous because the data changes too easily.
Right.
I would start with some kind of free SQL server. You know, you've got what MySQL's free. You can get, you know, SQL Server doesn't cost anything. You can run it locally on somebody's computer. There's all kinds of free tools out there that you can use to start creating your data architecture. But I would push as much of that into databases as you can and limit the people that can change that, automate as much of the as that as you can. You know, get the data from your CRM. Maybe use something like Zapier to just push the data in,
right.
Or you know, you write some Python code to update it, whatever it might be. But I would push as much back as you can to a, for lack of a better term, one source of truth, even though there's no, I don't know if there's one such thing as that either, but the more you can do that. And then if people want to use Excel, let them connect to that data set.
Exactly.
But ultimately, once the data is in Excel, it's their responsibility if it's right or wrong. So there needs to be accountability as well. So don't just assume that somebody's numbers are right when they're coming at it out of Excel. There needs to be maybe processes in place that vet the data against the source, right? Do these numbers add up to what's in the source? So, but there has to be, you know, accountability is a big part of that.
So I'm holding up Makeover Monday. Some of the chapter headings, I'm just going to rattle through. These are random. Habits of a good data analyst, effective use of color, designing for audience, attention to detail, keep it simple, no one understand the data. I'll do one more, choosing the right chart. My favorite concept is keeping it simple. That's my favorite concept.
I think it's absolutely fundamental. People overcomplicate things to make themselves look smart, but I bet you people appreciate them more if they just get the clear answer, right? And keeping it simple, again, it might be just a number. Sometimes a spreadsheet is the answer or a table is the answer. It doesn't have to be a chart or a graph, right? You're trying to communicate data. A table is one way to communicate data. But it has to be easy to understand. If it's not easy to understand, if somebody can't understand it at a glance, then you probably haven't made it simple enough.
I also love chapter 10 in the book. By the way, I've given away a couple of these copies to CEOs, and I'll just have them just go to chapter 10 and just kind of just flip through.
I need to look at chapter 10 myself.
What that tells me it's all the different types of chart types.
Oh yeah.
And what that tells me, Andy, is there is no such thing as the best chart. There's only the best chart for the situation that dictates effective and useful communication. I do need to ask a stupid question. Is the pie chart finally dead? Yes or no?
No, it's never going to be dead. It shouldn't necessarily be dead either. I mean, it's got its purpose. I think the problem gets in when people overcomplicate a pie chart, right? If you're typically when somebody creates a pie chart, they're trying to communicate one number out of that pie chart.
Right, exactly.
And if they're trying to communicate that one number, then make it that one versus everything else, just two colors. And then maybe make it a donut instead and put that number in the middle, right? But, you know, when you see, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 colors in a pie chart, it's, you know, that should be the first sign that you need to make it a bar chart.
One last thing I want to say about the book is, and this is going to be one of those duh comments, but context is king. I bet as a teacher, and you've looked at probably hundreds and hundreds of dashboards, and it's like maybe we're putting a dashboard just for the sake of creating a dashboard, but context is king. Is that right?
Is it king? I think so. It comes back to your audience. You know, if you're going back to your CEO example, the CEO may be ultimately looking for one number. You may or may not need to add context to that number. They may already have it in their head, right? So in that case, you don't need to add context. So it depends on your audience for one thing. If you're ever unsure, you should add context. And the best way to do that is, whether it's a chart, a number, whatever, is to ask yourself, compared to what? Anything you put on there. So if I put a bar chart on there and I say, you know, yes, it might rank whatever from highest to lowest, but compared to what? Like, what does that mean? Yes, this one's the top, this one's the second, but was it the highest the previous year? How does it compare to the average? So ask yourself, always ask yourself, compared to what?
I have a suggestion for you, but before I get to that idea for you, CFO Bookshelf is about lifelong learning for financial leaders and all other business leaders. Let's take the young data analyst, and they are starting to get immersed into Tableau. They like it. They enjoy it. As best as possible, I know there's no perfect continuous learning route, but and I don't know if you've had this question ever asked, Andy, and I apologize if I'm hitting you cold with it, but what does lifelong learning look like, especially in the early 5 to 6 years of a young data analyst? Obviously, they're going to be doing a lot of YouTube videos, watching you, but I'm even thinking outside of their area of domain expertise, can they be learning?
Yeah, I think you have to be learning outside of your domain if you're going to make yourself well-rounded enough. Plus, it makes you more employable. You need to build a portfolio that shows that you know you're learning along the way. I mean, I learn every day. You know, I realized, you know, I don't know when I realized it, but at some point I was like, you know what? I'm continuing to learn every day. This is absolutely fantastic. I'm so lucky that I get to learn every day. The problem, you know, one of the issues I see now is that some of the tools are really easy to get. You feel like you're really good at really quickly. So you quickly rate yourself 7 out of 10 after using it for 2 months. And I'll be like, okay, how do you rate yourself a 7 out of 10? And it's like, and there's nothing wrong with them saying that because that's their perspective on where they are.
Right.
But then at some point you realize what you don't know. And you go back down to like a 2 or a 3 because you know, you realize what that knowledge gap is. And it's the people that push back up that hill are the ones that are going to be successful. Some people, a lot of people, won't do that. They can't be bothered. They don't have the work ethic to do it. There's a lot of lazy people in this world. They want things handed to them. And sorry to tell you, but that's not the way the world works. You know, if you want to get ahead, you have to work at it. And that means, you know, sometimes you have to build skills after hours. You know, I can't even count the number of hours I've spent thousands and thousands of hours probably over 10,000 hours, you know, Malcolm Gladwell's magic yes. number, just working on Tableau outside of my job, because I want to keep improving my skills, right? All of the live streams I used to do were all done after hours. So, you know, I just felt like it was my way of dedicating to my craft to continue to learn. Every data set I work with is different. It's a data set I've never seen before. So how can I take this data set I've never seen before, look where the data came from to understand what it's even about? Then how do I inspect that data? How do I then turn it in, communicate that data? So all that is a lifelong learning process. You can't ever finish. The problem is not enough people are willing to push through when they hit that first roadblock.
This may be an unfair request or an unfair question, given the journey you're on with your business. I aimed to ask this to Steve Wexler a couple of years ago. By the way, he's a phenomenal teacher in this space as well. I want to say now, moving a little bit into my space, the world of financial intelligence, there are a couple of writers who wrote the book Financial Intelligence. I think they came out in 2006, thereabouts. Some of their writing hit HBR around 2009. They did a series of articles in the same year. About 6 or 7 years earlier, there was a book called Managing by the Numbers, where the Mobley Matrix was elevated, which came out of a school that used to be done in IBM, teaching every employee how to read financials. And it started with the Mobley Matrix. So I want to say, starting in the 1990s, financial intelligence started coming on the scene. I would love to hear or see what your outline might look like if you were doing a boot camp for chief executive officers around the globe. What might that outline look like? These are going to be people who will not necessarily use Tableau themselves, but they're going to be the customers, the consumers of the presentations they're receiving daily or weekly or monthly. Is that an unfair question to ask? What might your outline look like for a bootcamp?
It's not. I don't think it's an unfair. It's a question I've never thought about before. So it's really interesting. I wouldn't even focus at all on the tools. It's all about communication. They need to, if they want to get the answers that they're after, they have to be able to put the time in to work with that person. Don't just tell them what to do and tell them the question you're trying to answer and then go off and hope they bring back the right answer, you know, a couple weeks later or a couple days later, whatever it might be. You have to be able to put in the time to iterate with that person, get feedback from that person, and encourage that person to do that with you, right? Because, I mean, they will build up so much loyalty for you as well if you interact with them. Too many CEOs are in their high tower and nobody shall talk to thee. Like at Coca-Cola, there's one floor just for the executives. And you're not allowed on that floor. Like, how stupid is that? You know, why not let people talk to anybody in the company? But anyway, I'll get off my soapbox about that. But I think they need to understand that their job as the CEO is to clearly communicate what the problem they're trying to solve is and what the questions they're trying to answer are. And they have to make sure that they encourage the people they're working with to continue to ask them questions if they don't understand. Right? You have to build a culture where it's okay for people to say, you know, I don't understand what you're telling me. How many times do people just go off and say, oh, the CEO told me this, I can't ask any questions about it. And then they go off and they do a short prayer to make sure they come back with the right answer, right? But a good CEO will encourage those sorts of communications, right? And all it's going to do is benefit them in the long run. It's going to save them time by investing in that communication up front. And you're investing in that person too. You know, you're making them more loyal to you and the company. You're helping build their skills. You're improving their communication. All of those things are good for the company, but you get none of them if you don't communicate with them.
I think the date of the publishing of this book, The Great Game of Business, back in the 1980s, mid to late 1980s, might have been early 1990s, by Jack Stack. And OBM started becoming a little bit more entrenched in the minds of business leaders because of its marketing. Again, OBM, Open Book Management. And I've seen a lot of really butt ugly charts and graphs and presentations in the OBM movement. And that's another reason why this question comes about, because again, I think it'd be great. I'd love to see some type of a boot camp really designed by someone like you. I would pay good money just to sit in and listen and observe. So that, again, that's kind of the thought behind the question. Hey, I know you're a reader. Before we get there,
well, let me go back to what you just said there. But how many of those CEOs are willing to invest the time and to admit that they need to improve those things?
Now, that's a good question. Now, they will admit, hey, I need help on understanding my financials. And a lot of times for me, if you look at a lot of the financial packages I've designed, I mean, there's a very, very strong visual element, mainly just to help explain the story. So there's always going to be the question, help me to understand my numbers better. So usually it's kind of a, you're kind of going through the side door to get to that, to get to the data viz. So maybe they're not asking that specifically. They're asking a different question first. Then we get to the data viz. I probably use Wheeler's and Schuhertz control charts almost every single day, helping to understand variation. And it's amazing to see the eyeballs just get bigger. Like, I'd never seen that before, or I didn't understand the difference between noise and just normal random variation. They'd never asked that question until it got presented to them in the context of answering a finance question or a financial statement question. That's the best way I would answer it. You're right. They may not be asking it. They may be asking a different question. Your solution may be part of the answer, though. That's a good question. That's one of those questions where I'll have the perfect answer 3 days from now, Andy. So, I know you're a reader. Before we get there, promote the heck out of anything. I know we got your YouTube channel. And one more thing, your LinkedIn posts, they are excellent. I don't know who came up with the concept, just be helpful. Anything you post, obviously you're promoting, but you're being helpful. I mean, I actually click. Yeah. You had two posts today, or maybe one was being recycled, but the one today on, I think it was on dashboards.
Yeah.
And I clicked through it. And your posts are, I think, an example of how any marketer or influencer should be doing it. You are being helpful.
Well, that's really good to hear. I appreciate that. That's what I'm trying to be through all of that. But going back to what we talked about earlier, that's because I'm continuing to learn, right? This writing on LinkedIn is new to me. I've never done it before. So everything I used to do was on Twitter. And I kind of got tired of the trolls, the bots, all that kind of stuff. On LinkedIn, everybody has to behave more or less, right? Yes. Because it's you have to put a good face on. Now, I don't want to dismiss that there's good debates to have, because there are, but people can still be kind when they have those debates. But I joined a coaching program last year, June-ish timeframe, it's Dan Martell's Elite Coaching Program. So he wrote the book, Buy Back Your Time. And the part of that is you have these 5 daily non-negotiables. So these are the things you have to do every day if you want to be in the program. And part of that is reading. So you have to read 10 pages of nonfiction every day. You have to exercise for 45 minutes a day. You have to review your goals every day. I include a 6th one, which is doing a German lesson every day. There's also, you have to reach out to at least 5 people you don't know. And you have to post 3 things on social media every day. So for a lot of the people in the program, they do stuff through Instagram. So it's relatively easy to post 3 pieces of content a day on Instagram, right? Just hold your phone up and record something. It's much more difficult on LinkedIn. So since June of last year, I've done at least three posts a day. Sometimes I consider my newsletter a post, but that's semantics, I guess. But I've provided at least three pieces of content every day for the last, I don't know, 300 days, something like that. So when I hit the 1 year mark, I'm going to write a summary post of how it's all gone. I've more than doubled my audience, probably 2.5 times. And again, that's not why I'm doing it, but people are obviously finding the content interesting if they start following. My impressions and engagements have gone way up. But one of the things in Dan's program, he tells us, give everything away. You know, and people like free stuff, but what you're selling them is solutions, and you're the solution to their problem. Right. And if they want to work with you, they can get an even better solution. Everything that is in my membership program, people can learn on YouTube. But what they don't get is they don't get to work with me. So that's the difference. You don't get to learn live from me, like you were speaking about earlier, about how I explain things, how you like how I explain things. That's what they get when they join my program. You don't get that through YouTube videos. YouTube is more or less follow this step, then do this step, then do this step, right? Except for maybe live streams, but or workshops that I run. But that's the difference that you get in those programs. But it's the giving away the content is what gets people to want to work with you.
Favorite books. I know you're a reader. I subscribe to your newsletter. And even a couple of months ago, you were mentioning some of the books you're reading. It's like, I love this. So again, you just mentioned you're supposed to read 10 pages a day. Andy, I bet you're reading more than 10 pages of nonfiction.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I read probably 30 or 40 a day.
So can I be nosy and ask, what are some of your favorite books, or what are books that you maybe recommend the most or gift the most?
That is a really good question. So if it's somebody that's in business, definitely Buy Back Your Time by Dan Martell. One of the most interesting books the book that I use the most is a book called Exactly What to Say. I wrote about that one a while back, but that one is, I'm trying to think who the author is. I don't have it written down who the author is. But anyway, people can find it. It's the only book called that, Exactly What to Say. And I use that one a lot. What are some of the other books that I've really liked? There was one I read about dogs and nutrition. It's something about, I can't remember the title, something like Why Dogs Love Us or something like that, or Unconditional Love. And it just was, I have a dog and she's my best buddy. So I don't read just business books, right? I want to read about all Good. Kinds of things in life, right? And Good. I think it's important for me to be, you can only read so many business books before you get tired of reading business
right.
books.
Right.
So Exactly What to Say is a must read for anybody in business. If you're a leader of a company, you have to read Buy Back Your Time. So that the book I was referring to about the dogs, it's written by Clive Wynn, W-Y-N-N, and it's called Dog is Love. I just finished one as well. Another one. I love reading books about dogs. I finished one last week. What is the name of it? It's about a guy in the army that goes to Iraq, or not Iraq, Afghanistan, as part of the war there. And it's called One Dog at a Time. And they're at they're really remote compound he's in the British Army, and he witnesses a dog fight, and he's a dog person, and he breaks up the dog fight and takes the dog and builds a home for it inside of their facility. And then it's almost like rumor spreads that there's this guy that takes care of dogs. And it's just, what an unbelievable story. It's just what that person did for these animals is just, you wonder how anybody in the world is mean.
It's been over a decade ago. And one of the themes is very, very heavy in the book. I almost wish it could have been left out. but I enjoyed The Art of Racing in the Rain. I think there's not a movie. I've never watched the movie, never will, but the book itself was like, this came out of nowhere, and I thought it was phenomenal. The story is written from the dog's perspective, and it's like what I would call very smart humor. I mean, because the dog is observing life from, I think the dog is a he, and it's a hoot. Like I said, there is one heavy theme in it. It's like I wish that part could have been left out, but again, it's to me it's a 5-star book. One more thing about books.
Apparently, it's a movie as well.
Well, like I said, and I haven't watched, and it's one of those I don't want to watch it because I know they'll take some liberties. But again, the book is just, again, it is a 5-star book. It's great.
I'm ordering it right now.
Read it or listen to it. One last thing about books. You do listen to your readers, because I responded with I think you had a question about what to read, and I just threw out just a simple business book. I coach a lot of CFOs wanting to start a practice, and I always make them read Anything You Want by Derek Sivers, because everything he did, he screwed up. And he even had to buy back his own business from his dad.
Oh, that was a great story.
Had you been his CFO or his financial advisor, what could you have been doing to prevent some of these things from happening? And did you enjoy that book?
Oh, it was fantastic. Yeah, I read it in like 2 days. But it was really interesting because I felt like it really resonated with me. You know, and it's like, okay, you can screw up, but ultimately, you know, he talks a lot about the same sort of stuff we've been talking about now, is give right. things away, treat people well. Your customers are, if you don't treat your customers well, you're not going to have any customers, right? It's okay to give a customer a refund if they're not happy.
Well, Andy, this has been phenomenal. When you said yes, I was like a few fist pumps, because again, I'm a fan, love the YouTube channel. I love your blog, because I can always go back there. I'm not saying it's easier to search, but again, I love the blog, appreciate your LinkedIn content that we mentioned a couple of minutes ago. So I cannot thank you enough for saying yes, because you are a busy person.
Well, I appreciate that. Thanks for asking me. This is a very unique conversation I've never had before. So thank you very much. I've really enjoyed it.
You are listening to CFO Bookshelf, lifelong learning for financial leaders. And now back to our host, Mark Gandy.
If you'd like to learn more about Andy Kriebel, I'd start with his YouTube channel. And even if you're not a DataViz creator, just watch one of his sub 10-minute videos and appreciate his authenticity and his demeanor and the way he teaches. Andy, he's the person you want to hear at workshops, boot camps, or even at TEDx or talks at Google. We need to call this a wrap. I'm Mark Gandy for CFO Bookshelf.